This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp and Ember Wave. We are happy to have them on board, making this show a possibility and keeping us sane and cool all at the same time. Thank you so much.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
Let me show you.
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
It's not for the gay reason. Just because we stay.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Guess what?
What?
Jamie, our audiobook is out.
OMG.
Me and you reading the book together is available for folks.
You need to go get that. You need to go get it. Even if you have the book, why don't you listen to us read it too? You know, actually, Amazon has a thing where you can buy the audiobook with the book and then you can toggle between the two. I just did that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So if you're like driving and you want to hear some of the book that you've been reading at night, it'll pick up right where you left off. They have this new thing.
That's so cool. And it's available on Audible, Amazon, and iTunes, our audiobook. So we just want to say that.
Go get that jam.
If These Ovaries Could Talk, the things we've learned about making an LGBTQ family. Boom.
That was fast.
Thanks.
Say that 10 times fast.
Let's not.
Okay. So guys, it is November, and November is National Adoption Month. Did you know that?
I did know that. I just learned it. I didn't know it before.
So we want to talk a little bit about that. And we got a listener voice memo about one of the stories that we did, one of the episodes we did on adoption.
Yeah. This woman named Anne sent us a voice memo about the episode called Smooth Sailing Adoption, which was, if you know, want to go back and re-listen to it, it's season 5, episode 17.
Yes, it was two dads who had adopted two little adorable girls.
And she had some real concerns and corrections that she wanted to make about, not about our guests, but about the lawyer and the advice that he gave them about birth mothers.
Yes, because she has also adopted two children, and so she knows the adoption process very well.
Let's play it. Let's play it.
Let's do it.
Hey, Robin and Jamie. What's up, Helen? Hope everybody is hanging in there in this strange time. I am a listener, and I wanted to call in and check in with you all. My partner and I have two young boys, both through open adoption, two different birth mothers. And I was listening to your Smooth Adoption episode recently, and a couple of things happened during that episode that prompted me to call in. I've never emailed or called a podcast before, and I just wanted to bring it up. So for context, I am a nurse, and in my work, I work with victims of sexual assault. And one of the things that you learn in doing that work over and over and over again is that everybody responds differently to trauma and emotional distress. And so when I was listening to your Smooth Adoption episode, your guests were talking about a lawyer that they worked with in LA who had been working with LGBTQ people for quite some time doing open adoption. And a couple of things that the lawyer said, I felt needed to be corrected strongly. And one of them was that when talking about the first meeting with the birth mother, the lawyer noted that if she doesn't cry in her first meeting, that then she's not doing her emotional processing work and she's more likely to terminate the adoption. And that is some misogynistic bullshit. It's also just totally inaccurate. And I know that people that are new to this open adoption thing just want every bit of information they can get. And I'm certain that the lawyer has a lot of experience. But just in general, that is a very disempowered statement. It's not accurate. And I just needed to call in and let you know that. The only other thing that I noted that the lawyer was telling them was he was giving them statistics about the proximity of the birth mother during her birth or right before her birth to the adoptive family. And that was also with the expectation that she was potentially farther away from in proximity from her support system. And if that was the case, then she was much more likely percentage-wise to go through with the adoption, which was essentially advocating for working towards separating a birth mother from her support system during an incredibly emotional and difficult time for her, assumedly. And that is just not the way that I want to see open adoption promoted. It is such a complicated and beautiful and brave thing to do. And I want everybody out there to understand that if you are a person thinking about doing that or making that decision for you and your child, that you get to respond however the hell you want. and that having a support system will be that much more possible for you to be able to do the work that you need to do to make the best decision for your life. And for adoptive parents, how about start out your relationship with your birth parent or mother in allowing them to be whoever they need to be, however they need to be, and then you get to do the emotional work of working to support them as best that you can for the incredible gift that they may choose to give you of their child. Anyway, that's what I have to say. Our boys, their boys so far, who knows who they will be, are incredible, and our relationship with their birth parents is complicated and beautiful and all of the things. But I just want to thank you, Robin and Jamie, for the work that you're doing and for putting out all this great information for those of us that are kind of navigating these strange, murky waters of becoming a family. So take good care, all, and thanks for your time.
Right? Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Anne, for that. Thank you for that thoughtful and honest feedback, and we really appreciate it. And I have to say, when we were talking to them in the interview, and they said that thing about
the first part about the lawyer saying she doesn't cry, right?
Yes. When I heard him say that, I do remember thinking, ooh, that doesn't sound like good advice, and that doesn't really sound like Do you know what
just
I'm saying?
It sounds weird. Like, I was kind of like, you could be really emotionally shut down and just know you're doing the right thing, but you can't go there. Like, you know, no, so it's like, I was just like, I'm not a psychiatrist, and we all know that, for God's sakes, but it just seemed it didn't seem like great advice.
That statement felt off, and I didn't say anything in the interview, and neither did you. And I think that's a lot of times it's because we don't want to make them feel bad and they're telling their story. But I really appreciate this feedback, and I kind of agree. That was some crazy advice that they got.
Yeah.
And also the part she says about getting to know your birth mother, and that relationship is beautiful and complicated, and she feels it's her job as an adoptive mother to cultivate the relationship and to support the birth parents. And I also forgot to say, I love that she said hi to Helen. Helen's ears perked up, her eyes lit up.
Helen lives. All right.
Thank you so much for that, Anne.
Yeah.
I love this kind
of feedback, because it's just like, you just gave our audience an even deeper and richer understanding about adoption. And that's what we want to do, is just give as much information as we can. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's do some more thank yous.
Let's talk Patreon. We have a couple of new Patreon members, Wendy Peoples and Jessica. Now, Wendy didn't give Jessica's last name, so it's Wendy Peoples and Jessica.
Jessica, good job.
But Jessica, we still love you, even though we don't have your last name. So Jessica, without a last name.
We love you just as much as Wendy Peoples.
We sure do.
And Moriah McDermott. I think I said that right.
I don't know. Really, you gave it a Moriah.
Because it's at Moriah. It's an O. Anyway, Moriah. Thank you, Moriah McDermott. We love you, too.
And thank you, everyone. Thank you for all of your support. And if you want to join our Patreon community, you're going to basically help us make the show. And you're going to get bonus content and video interviews of most of the episodes. And those are dropped a day early ahead of the episode. So you're just going to have to go to patreon.com/ovariestalk.
You can hear our ovaries a day early. Come on, guys.
Ovaries, because it's unedited.
I know.
You just see like all the messiness.
There's a lot of messiness.
Yeah, I know. Thank God for edit audio, for cleaning our shit up, Jamie. Oh, good Lord.
Okay. What's our guest's name, Robin?
It's Aran Amir. I didn't screw it up. I'm so proud of myself.
Yes.
He's the founder of Go Stork.
Yes.
And he's a gay dad that decided to help make the process of making our families easier and more transparent.
Yeah. We don't need to say much more. It's all explained in the episode. It's a really great episode. It was a really good talk. I think we should just get right into it. Bring Aran in.
Ready, Helen. Ready, Jamie?
Helen! Roll the tape, Helen. It's literally a tape. She presses play. It's literally one of those like old tapes.
By the way, explaining to my daughter yesterday about what a cassette tape was, and she was like, so what, how is it on the tape? And I was like, I don't know. I think there's magnets.
I don't even know.
All right, for God's sakes, let's get to Aran. Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Aran.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
Pretty good.
We're so excited to be working with you guys. I mean, you run Go Stork. You're the founder and the creator of Go Stork. And then you also have this really amazing story. I mean, should we get to the 30-second elevator pitch of your story?
Sure, of course.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let me get out my handy dandy timer.
But there's no pressure. Robin likes to make it very pressurized.
I do. Jamie, stop telling people I make pressure. All I do is show them the clock.
Aaron, we won't cut you off. We promise.
Sounds like a deal.
All right. On your mark, get set, go.
So 4 years ago, I was a single guy in New York. Today, I'm a husband and a father, though it wasn't happening in the usual order. Like, I began my surrogacy journey in 2016. Now, I'm so grateful to have an amazing daughter, Arielle. She's so cute, smart. She's growing so fast. I met my husband, Mike, soon after I started my surrogacy journey. Fast forward a few years later, we got married. A day before she turned one, and co-parenting with him was just an amazing and incredible process. And we're hopefully going to get a new one very soon.
Oh my wow. God. I didn't know that last part.
5 seconds. Well played.
That's exciting.
Yeah. That's pretty recent.
Wow. Okay. So
we have a lot to unpack. We have a lot to unpack.
Basically, you started this out. You were going to be a single dad by choice.
Yes, I was single gay in New York. I was like, if I'm not going to find my husband until 40, I'm just going to start by myself. And a day after I turned 40, I started Googling surrogacy agencies and IVF clinics and egg donors, and I started my journey. It took me a few weeks to just research all of that. It was just like a very overwhelming process to understand who are the players out there, what's the difference between them, how much it's going to cost me, what should I look for, what questions I should, I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
It was really,
and Aaron, you seem kind of like you are a researcher. Am I wrong?
I am. Part of working in technology for the last 25 years, when you build a product for other companies, you always do market research to understand the market, who are your potential clients, who are your buyers. So you do a lot of market research. So I did a very thorough market research when I started my own journey. And I realized there's like so many surrogacy agencies or egg donors and IVF clinics. There's like 500 IVF clinics in the U.S. alone. How do you go about it? Just IVF clinics.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's what we always talk about, lesbian, or we used to call it lesbian drafting, and then it became LGBTQ drafting, about how you end up doing oftentimes just doing what your friends did before you, because they're the ones, you feel like they've done some research, and so you just kind of like blindly follow them, like, oh, that, well, they got a baby that way, so I'll do
it. Yeah, and if you're like me, who doesn't enjoy researching very much at all, you literally do what your friends did.
Exactly. A lot of friends ask their friends about their experience in IVF clinics, and that's why we built in GoStork also reviews and ratings. So parents can actually not just see the information about the clinics and the agencies, they can see what other people are thinking about their journey with these providers.
Well, great. before we get into GoStork, which I definitely want to get into, I want to hear a little bit about your personal story.
Yes.
Like, when did you know you wanted to have kids? And since, like, I mean, was it just like always when I hit 40, I'm going
to
do this?
Oh, no. I was like hoping to be a parent way before that. I moved to New York in 2008 and I had a couple partners. They all freaked out when I said I want to have a family. So
you were like in it to win it from the start.
Oh, yeah. Like Jewish families, they all have like, you know, a lot of kids. And I grew up into that. For me, holidays and Shabbat was always big dinner and all the families gathering around the table. And I wanted that for myself. It's just like in New York, it's really hard to find someone that is looking for something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was ready a long time ago.
When you moved to New York, how old were you?
I was 31.
And you were already like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my brother, he married when he was 25 years old, and he had his first child when he was 28. So it's,
wow.
Like in Israel, it's very family oriented, also very business, obviously. But, you know, for us, family comes first. Mm-hmm. And it feels mm-hmm. like in New York, it's the business comes first. And maybe if you have time for a family, it's going to come later.
Yeah, we always say that's why a lot of the IVF clinics are packed with, like, you see the women who, like, you know, they were like have the corner office at a big company.
Yeah.
But then maybe they waited a little too long.
100%.
And then us LGBTQ people littered about.
Yes. We're all very goal oriented in our careers today. Everyone wants to be, to achieve his goals and to get better and promoted. And you don't even notice how time goes by, and you're 38 or 40 and you're still not having a child.
Yeah.
And then you realize that you have fertility problems, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I have so many friends, gay, straight, that just trying to get pregnant for 3 years and they can't.
Yeah.
So
yeah. It's tough. And you know, like even some of us are not ready even when we really need to start. You know, I got pushed into it because my wife was older. I would have waited even longer and then probably I wouldn't be a parent right now. So
yeah,
it's really, it's a hard, true fact for the LGBTQ community, especially.
Yeah.
All right, Jamie, it's time to talk therapy. I know I need therapy right now, and I think everyone could use therapy right now. So let's talk about BetterHelp.
You know, I'm sure we could all use someone to talk to with all the craziness going on in the world. And BetterHelp is there for everyone. It's true.
I mean, with Maxine's car accident and the fact that we're losing our health insurance any day and the global pandemic and the scary election, which is happening today, I'm working the BetterHelp now, too, because I love my lady. She is a godsend.
Yeah. And, you know, but BetterHelp assesses your needs and it matches you with your own licensed professional therapist. And you can start communicating with that person in under 48 hours.
Which is exactly what I did.
I know.
But we do want to make sure to underline it's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's actual professional counseling that's done securely online.
Yes. And the service is available for clients worldwide.
Amazing.
So that means that there's a broad range of expertise available, which you might not be able to find in your local town.
Yeah.
But since it's available worldwide,
you can get it. And you can log into your account anytime, and then you can send a message to your counselor, and you're going to get a timely and thoughtful response, like ASAP.
Yeah. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to wait in an uncomfortable waiting room. Like you do with traditional therapy. I mean, who wants to sit in a waiting room with all those other germs floating around right now anyway?
I also love that BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. So they make it easy and it's free to change counselors if needed. So if it doesn't work, switch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling. And financial aid is available.
Oh my God. BetterHelp wants you, and let's be honest, me, to start living a happier life today.
Yes, they do. And so do I. So, guys, you're going to visit BetterHelp.com/OCT. That's Better H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
And, we have a special offer for If These Ovaries Could Talk listeners. You're going to get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/OCT.
That's BetterHelp.com/OCT. Get that help. Get that help.
What made you realize the moment that you were like, I'm going to go this alone? Like, when were you like, I'm going to turn this corner and I like, who cares? Fuck it. I'm doing it.
To be honest, I had a partner for a few years and we kind of like were on and off. And then I said, like, if this is not going to happen with him and I'm turning 40, I'm just going to start by myself. I'm very confident. I'm very financially stable, emotionally in the right place. And I wanted to have kids for so long. So that was the moment where I was like getting 40 and I was like, I didn't want to be an old dad to a very young child. And it felt like I'm already late, that I'm already going to be that old dad. But yeah, for me, the 40 years old, that was the point where I was like, I'm just starting by myself. I can do it. I see other brave moms that are single moms. And I was like, if they can do it, I can do it. So it's possible. And, you know, just when you stop looking for a partner, that's when they come.
That's what everybody says.
Yeah.
6 months into the process, I was matched with Mike, my husband, on Tinder. So I was in New York and he just moved that day from New York to Boston and we matched. And I asked him, how did we match if you were in Boston? He was like, I just moved today from New York to Boston. So we lived in New York together for all this time and we never met. And we matched the day he left New York.
Weird.
So do you do like a long distance thing for
a while? Yes, I was already in the process. So I told him on the first chat before we even met, listen, I'm in the middle of like surrogacy program. Take it or leave it. This is just another filter. I don't want to waste any more time. And he was like, I love that. Let's meet. And six hours after, I was on the train to Boston. My best friend lives there with his family. So I told him, hey, I'm going to come to see you. I might meet a guy. And this date, this date turned into a 5 days date where Mike met my best friend and his wife and their kids. So we spent like, I saw Mike in a family environment where he played with their kids. And it was amazing to see that. I knew right away that he's the right guy.
Wow. And how far along in your surrogacy process were you at this point?
I had a carrier. We matched with a carrier and we were just about to do the transfer. So Mike was with me when we found out that we're pregnant. It was, I remember this day, we were in P-Town when we found out. We got the email from the clinic and it was amazing. It was so emotional.
Wow. What I'm really curious about, this reminds us of the interview I did with Jana and Linda, where Jana was like a step parent coming in, but she was kind of always there. At what point did it transition from like, this is my baby to this is our baby? Like, because in the beginning, this was your process. And if you guys, if it had broken up, you were still going forward. And then I assume he would not be involved.
Yeah, I think from the beginning, Mike said that he wants to be a father for Ariel. It was never me and him. It was always us since he joined the family, even before she was born. And the first time he held her, it was like he knew she was his. It was not even a question. I always told Mike, and I'm telling him every day, you're the best dad I could ever have for Ariel. Oh. I'm so grateful. Like he's a better dad than even a husband. Like he's putting her number one mm-hmm. over me, which is exactly how it should be. She's number one. Mm-hmm. And I'm just grateful. Even though he did not adopt her yet officially, he's 100% her dad.
I love that. I guess it's a little bit different because he came in right before she was conceived. Yes. So, and from the day one, he was on board with having a baby.
He was so excited to have her.
And it's like you did all the legwork for him and then he came in. He was like, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do this.
Yes.
Well, you guys must have just known that you were for each other very early on to have that level of trust.
To be honest with you, on our first day, we kind of like said we want to be exclusive. We had such a great connection and we had so many conversations that day and seeing him around my friends and around kids. He asked me, Iran, I want to be your boyfriend. I don't want you to be on dating apps anymore. We had an amazing connection. And we immediately knew that this is
you guys
this
are
is
like
it.
Such lesbians. You are such lesbians. You like had a 5-day U-Haul date. It's like, it's amazing.
Can you take us through your fertility process?
Yes. So I was looking around to understand which providers I should work with, which surrogacy agency, an egg donor agency, an IVF clinic. I asked my friends, none of them did. I was literally the first one in my group that actually about to have a child. Hmm. So I was researching. And then I sort of like, I need to start asking more questions, more people. Somehow a friend of a friend of a friend had a friend. He had gone through surrogacy and with the Circle Surrogacy, and with Pacific Fertility Center, Los Angeles. And he told me that he had an amazing journey with them. And he also had a friend that did surrogacy with Circle Surrogacy and with the same doctor. So suddenly I had two references to the same resources. So I was like stopping my whole market research. And then I went with the Circle Surrogacy and Pacific Fertility Center, Los Angeles, Dr. Sahakian, which were amazing. But looking for an egg donor was very hard for me. I had to go through 3 different egg donor agencies until I matched with an egg donor because they don't have a lot of egg donors. Each agency has between 50 to 200 egg donors. And after you put your filters, what you're looking for, you're not left with a lot of egg donors. And that was one of the main things I wanted to solve with GoStork. Today we have like 6,000 egg donors from different agencies. So you're always going to find your egg donor in GoStork.
Wow.
Well, going back to my journey, we started the process. I finally was matched with an egg donor. I was actually matched with 3 egg donors, but they had genetic problems, so the doctor disqualified them. So it was not easy at all. The surrogacy part was okay. We started the process. I sent her to the IVF clinic. They extract the eggs, and they only created 4 embryos.
Yeah.
So after 5 days, we only had 1 embryo left.
Oh, that's so
that must have been nerve wracking.
Do you remember how many eggs they extracted initially?
Yes, 14 eggs. but only four of them were good eggs. And so that's the way that ended. And then after 5 days, only one left. So we only had one chance with the carrier. And obviously, it was successful transfer. We call Ariel the survivor because she's the only one who survived the 5 days. So that was an amazing, amazing.
Wow. I thought you were going to tell me you had to go back to the drawing board.
I know.
No, yeah.
Wow.
And we want to have, obviously, more kids, and we're going to use his sperm in the future, from my sperm and from his sperm.
Wow, kids plural. Look at you.
I know.
How many kids do you want?
Three, four.
Wow.
That's exciting.
God bless you, is what I say. But Jamie and I each have two, and it's killing us. So.
So, yeah, we started with one. We're in the middle of the process of the second one. And then I guess we'll go from there. But, yeah.
Are you using the same surrogate?
No, we're using a different carrier. The other carrier already went through 5 pregnancies. So the doctor was like, you need to look for another carrier. So that's where we are.
And you call her the carrier, not the surrogate. Is that because of the state you're in, or... I know there's a difference between surrogate and carrier.
Gestational carrier. Yeah.
Actually, there's no difference. It's the same thing. It's just different names.
Okay. Is there a reason you choose to say carrier, or it's just the word you use?
Nope. There's no reason. I sometimes say surrogate mother. Sometimes I say carrier.
Okay. And how old is Ariel?
She's 2 years and 3 months.
Congrats. My son is almost 3. So they're close in age. How do you plan on talking with her about her origin story? And are you going to keep the carrier involved or in any way?
It's funny that you're asking. Just the last few weeks, we were talking, me and Mike, how are we going to tell Ariel about it, about us, about the journey, who she is, how she came to the world. And 2 weeks ago, I got a message from someone on Instagram through Ghost Stork, through our social media. I'm writing a book about gay dads and the journey of surrogacy. I want to send you a book that you can read to Ariel. And I got it yesterday.
Talk about the universe.
That's amazing.
Yes, it's an amazing book, and it's very illustrative. And it tells the story about how we met and how we went for trips. And it's just like amazing. And like the whole story is about how we met this woman, and she's helping us. So
that's incredible. Awesome.
I just got it yesterday in the mail. Wow. It's funny that you're asking.
That's kind of what Robin and I both, well, actually Robin did the research and found it. And then I copied her and got it too, but she found a book. There's this company in the UK that like creates books that are
the Donor Conception Network.
Donor Conception Network. And they create books that are really tailored to your particular makeup. So 2 moms who used IVF, or 2 moms
donor sperm
who used IUI, or 2 moms who used a known donor. It runs the gamut. So there are resources out there. So you plan on putting that in your story time rotation?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, of course.
That's kind of how all of us go about it.
I'm curious about, so you used a surrogate out of California, and now that the law is changing in New York, that won't be able to affect this particular round of your surrogacy, right? Because I'm assuming you already chose someone in another state, but will that make your life easier when it's legal in New York?
No, it has nothing to do with that. So my carrier is in Tennessee, and the birth is going to be in Oregon. Having surrogacy in New York is not relevant to my journey. It's amazing that it became legal in New York. I mean, when I did my first journey, I couldn't do that in New York. I was living in New York. Now I'm in Connecticut. But anyway, what matters is not where you live, it's where the surrogate lives, right? That's where the legality of the contract.
But that's what I mean. Wouldn't it be easier if your surrogate you were able to have a surrogate in the state where you live? Wouldn't that be easier for you? Or no, it doesn't, you don't find it mattered for you?
Yes, it could be easier for me to see her, to go to her appointments, but it also matters where your IVF clinic is, right? So she needs to go to your IVF clinic. So some parents prefer that the carrier is in the same state or city as the IVF clinic. My IVF clinic is in Los Angeles. So my carrier still needs to fly. I need to fly her to Los Angeles to do the medical screening and then to do the transfer and all of that. And then Yeah. And then she's being released to her own OB-GYN doctor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Once she's pregnant. Is that common to have to choose, like to have them be in such different places?
It is common for gay couples, but for straight couple, usually the couples, they would look for IVF clinics in their own town, because the woman would have to go to the IVF clinic and do the cycles. So it's easy for them to just go to the, in your own city. But if you're doing surrogacy, most couples don't really care unless they want to save money, because it's just like when you have to fly your egg donor and your carrier to the IVF clinic, you have to pay for all these expenses. So mm-hmm. having her from the East Coast to fly her to the West Coast, it's flights, hotels, it's cars, it's food, it's loss of wages. So all of that, if you want to save money, you might want to look for an egg donor or carrier in the same state of your IVF clinic. And right. that's going to save you a lot of money for travel expenses.
Which is not easy. It's all very complicated, unfortunately.
Well, I feel like this is where Go Stork's going to come in.
I think so.
To make it a little less complicated.
Yes. My mission is to help, you know, other intended parents to start their journey, to find all these agencies and egg donors and surrogacy agencies and clinics, and to get all the information they need in order to make an informative decision. So we created transparency in the industry, and we asked all the providers to put the costs with a breakdown. For the first time ever, they agreed to expose the costs, the financials. So parents can actually see before that if they want to talk with the agency, they can see if they can afford it. Mm-hmm. And we built a comparison tool to help them see side by side what's the difference in the table, like what's the difference between these three agencies or between these three IVF clinics. And if they want to talk with them, there's no more emails back and forth. Are you available? When are you available? We integrate with their calendars.
Wow.
So you can see their availability and select the day and time that is best for you. So we connect them with these providers.
Wow.
That's huge, because we've heard from some people, like some surrogacy people, that at certain agencies, like they want you to fill out all this junk before they will even tell you anything. They yeah. want to know all, gather all your information for, it's like, you know, it's like getting a quote for a car. Like, I just want to know what the price is. I don't want you to take all my personal information before you just tell me what the cost
and
is.
And that goes for exactly. us too. I mean, that goes across the board. That goes for, it's not just for gay men. That goes for all fertility agencies out there. You don't get the yeah. costs up front.
Yes. Yes. And we built a chat functionality, so you can actually ask simple questions. It goes directly to the agency. They can reply. It's all in Go Stork. You can see all your messages with all the providers. And then when you're ready to schedule a call with them, you go to the calendar, you select the day and time, and now you're ready to actually talk with them. So you can ask a few questions and then you can schedule a call with them.
Did you have any of the agencies say, no, we're not going to release our prices to you?
At the beginning, they all thought I'm crazy. Like when I started a year and a half ago, they were like, are you crazy? I'm not going to put my secret sauce online and all my competitors
right.
will see how much the agency is making, how much the carrier is making, all that stuff. But I think talking to all these agencies and telling them my story and my personal story and my personal struggles, I convinced them that they're not really hiding anything. They're just preventing the inevitable. Because I'm going to do my market research anyway. Either you're going to put it online and save me time, or I'm going to call you all guys and ask you trivial questions and waste your time over the phone mm-hmm. to understand your prices. And then I'm going to do the comparison offline. Mm-hmm. So let's just put all the information that they need out there, including cost. Let's help them make the right decision. And if they want to talk with you, now they're ready to move on. They're not just asking questions. They already see all the information up front and they're ready to move on with you.
Mm-hmm.
So agencies realize that this is a time to actually change the processes and to put the prices out there and their experience. You can see also how they screen their carriers. So there's a lot of great information in each agency profile that parents want to know before they even talk with the agency.
That's fantastic.
It really is. I am surprised, like Jamie said, that you got everyone to go along with it, but I can see where your personal story would be helpful in getting them, you know, on board with it, because you're right. People are just going to waste their time, call and be like, tell me what your pricing is, tell me this, and then they're going to go someplace else. This way you're, it's all out there and you might actually get more business because you have testimonials and stuff like that on there too, don't you?
100%. We built in-house reviews and rating system that agencies can invite their previous intended parents to rate them and leave reviews. And then we monitor each review. We verify that it was the agency's client. And then we post it on their profile.
I just had a thought that it might even be a way to help get these agencies to bring costs down. Because if these agencies can see how much business another agency is getting with maybe lower prices, maybe those higher agencies are going to come down to meet the ones with the better prices so we could drive costs down.
Yes, that can be a side effect for each marketplace where you put competitors next to each other. They can adjust their prices and lower them. But just to be accurate, a lot of intended parents not just looking on the costs, right? So each parent, and that's why I explained to surrogacy agencies, right? When you're doing surrogacy, you need to be financially stable. So it's yes. not, you need to have $130,000 for surrogacy, you need $30,000 for egg donation, you need $30,000 for IVF. Like, you need to be financially stable. So yes. having $10,000 more or less, this is not going to be a deal breaker for intended parents.
That's a really valid point.
That is already spending $180,000 on the process. What matters for intended parent is your experience, your service, your honesty, the team, how you screen your carrier, what other people are saying about you. And I took all of these questions and I built it inside a profile. So you can see how many babies born through that agency, when it was founded, how long should I wait for a carrier until I was matched with a carrier, the screening process, the reviews, everything is in the profile.
That's great.
Is there any fee associated for the, like me, I want to do surrogacy and I'm using GoStork. Is there any fee associated for me?
It's free for intended parents.
Amazing.
I'm intended parent and I built it. I left my company, my job a year and a half ago. I spent all of my savings to build something that's going to help other intended parents without any barriers. We're already paying so much money. And I thought that intended parents deserve the best tool to help them start their journey.
It's great. Wow. It's a very worthy cause.
And who better to do it than a person who, one, has a tech background, and then two, has gone through the process. So it's like you're uniquely qualified to set this up and know what's needed.
100%.
All right. Hold on, Jamie. I'm schwitzing over here. I need to turn on my Ember Wave.
Oh, my God. Let's tell everybody about the Ember Wave that you love so much, okay?
Oh, my God. It's true. I really do love it. I have to close the window in this room when we record and all the street sound, and it just gets so hot in here. And my Ember Wave is a lifesaver.
Did you know that most public places, heat or cool spaces, aiming for a temperature that is comfortable for like only like 80% of the population? Leaving many people too hot or too cold, like yourself, although yours is because you have to close windows, but whatever.
Yeah, well, but, and also because everybody's idea of comfy temperature is unique.
Yes, and not feeling thermally comfortable can lead to a loss in focus and a loss of production. And we can't afford to have a loss in production. We run a very tight ship over here.
Yeah, I mean, one of us does, but it's true.
How dare you?
How dare you? My Ember Wave does help me run that tight ship.
Okay.
And all you have to do is press to activate Ember Wave, and it's going to create a cool or a warm sensation on your wrist. Mine's already working, Jamie.
I know it is because you're so happy. That's because the sensation works with your body and mind to make you feel more comfortable in a matter of minutes. The Ember Wave provides comfort in unpredictable climates, relief from stress, and it provides support for sleep.
Oh, yeah. And of course, I love the falling asleep mode. It helps me maintain a comfy temperature as I drift off to sleep.
Oh, it's so great. You can use the Ember Wave anywhere. And Robin, it looks pretty cool on your wrist there.
Sure does.
Some places I would use it maybe would be an over-air-conditioned office, a restaurant, airplanes, after a workout, malls, in the car, crowded public places, basically anywhere, obviously.
Yeah, which is what I plan to do.
Yeah. Right now, guys, Ember Wave is offering our listeners $50 off when you go to emberwave.com/OCT.
That's emberwave.com/OCT.
Go get yours. Do you have, I mean, you have heterosexual couples who use GoStork as well, right?
A lot of them. A lot of women straight couples are looking for egg donation, egg donors I'm talking with them every day. I'm actually, every time someone is interested in egg donors, I'm calling them to ask them how I can help them if they have a problem. How can we improve the product? Getting feedback from the intended parents is very important to me. I spent an hour yesterday on the phone with a woman that is looking for a specific, very specific egg donor. So I was helping her on the phone.
That's great. That's really interesting, because I had a friend who's a straight woman who had to choose an egg donor, I should say. And it was like she had like four people to choose from because she went to one clinic. So it's like, I love the idea of like, let's say I need an egg donor. I could go in and I can click, I want this, these traits. And you're going to show me every egg donor that is, you know, connected to GoStork. So it's going to open up the pool. It makes it more like our experience of choosing a sperm donor, where there's just more of an abundance to choose from.
Yes. And that was one of the reasons I built GoStork, because I had to go through three different egg donor agencies and register and put all these questions that they asked me just to find out that they don't have egg donors. So you can sign up for free for GoStork and put the filters that you're looking for: eye color, hair color, height, weight, race, ethnicity, location, anything you want. You're still going to find an egg donor in GoStork. This is the biggest online egg donor database right now.
That's amazing.
We have a huge variety of egg donors. These are not our egg donors. It's important to remember, I'm not an egg donor agency. I'm working with egg donor agencies to get their egg donors into GoStork and to have all of them in one place.
Interesting. Yeah, database is a great word. It just like tells you what it is. It's like you're amassing all the information from all the different places to help us little guys out here.
Correct.
That's great. Do you have anything that includes any kind of counseling for folks who have to use egg donors, or help with the disclosure aspect of how you're going to talk to your kids about their origin story? I say this because I know, not necessarily with our LGBTQ families, because it's kind of a given that we had to use extra help to make our children. And so the story is always there with our kids from the start. But for a lot of heterosexual couples, there's a little bit of trauma over the fact that they had to use an egg donor, and sometimes they don't tell their children because it's hard for them to swallow.
They don't even tell their friends.
Right. Yep. So yes.
This is a subject that a lot of women, because of they have fertility problems, it's very emotional. They don't tell it to anyone. And yes, regarding your question, we're planning to have GoStork as a one-stop shop where you can not only find surrogacy agencies and IVF clinics, you'll be able also to find counselors and anyone that can support your journey. If you wanna talk with someone, you'll be able to find them in GoStork, and we'll connect you with the right person that can help you. Social worker, lawyers, therapists, any provider related to your journey, you will be able to find and connect with them through GoStork.
That's great. Also, I just thought about second parent adoption, or if you use an egg donor as a woman, do you have to adopt your child?
We're actually going to have adoption agencies in the future. So GoStork is not going to be just for infertility. It's also going to be for, you know, if you just want to adopt a baby.
Oh, good.
And you need to find an adoption agency, then you'll be able to find it in GoStork.
That's great.
So essentially, you're looking for world domination in how to get your baby. Essentially,
I want to help anyone that wants to build their families in a non-traditional way. It's either through arts or through adoption, right?
Yep.
And there are other ways also, co-parenting in the future. There's any other way that you want to build your family, this is going to be where you're going to start looking.
It's like LGBTQ drafting, but on a much grander scale.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And
well,
yes,
it kind of eliminates LGBTQ drafting. It allows you to see it without having to like be a spreadsheet maniac like myself.
Correct.
It's like you're the spreadsheet maniac, and then Jamie could just sign up. Can you tell everyone where to find GoStork and where they can, you know, get all the information they need?
Go to GoStork.com.
Look at that.
Easy.
That's it. Well, thank you so much, Iran. Thank you.
This is great. Oh,
isn't Iran. He sweet? Isn't he sweet?
He is really sweet. What a sweetheart.
We have to tell people, though, that he was so cute. And so, like, at the beginning, I made him, he was, like, a little nervous, but I made him put headphones in for the production part.
He did not want to.
And he didn't want to because he was like, he's an adorable gay man who wanted to look pretty. And us lesbians were like, it's fine. It's fine.
We just always look so crappy that we're like, oh, wait, oh, you care about your looks. Interesting.
And I was like, yeah. I'm so sorry, but you have to put the headphones in. He's like, these corded ones. He's like, it's so. And I was like, you're going to have to.
But he was, I mean, he's creative. He put them,
he had them behind
his shirt. And he made it.
Yeah, and then I was still like, you have to stop that. You have to stop that.
I could take lessons from him on self-care.
Oh, I know.
But I know. We got to work better. We got to do better at that.
Oh, Jamie, I don't know that we're going to. All right. Our book is out now, guys. If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Things We've Learned About Making an LGBTQ Family. It's available at all major retailers. You can get Kindle, print, hardcover. And the audiobook is out now, which is available on Audible, Amazon, and iTunes. Come on.
And if you get it, don't be afraid to review it on Amazon or Goodreads. We love
those
reviews.
We really do. We got to juke the algorithm.
Yes.
We need t-shirts that say that.
Get our stories out. It's so important. And also, let's keep this conversation going. You can join us on the social. Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And also, If These Ovaries Could Talk on YouTube, where you're going to see recordings of our live streams that we do every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Facebook.
On the Facebook.
On the Book of the Face.
I knew it. Yep.
And you can support the podcast and you can join our community on Patreon at patreon.com/ovariestalk. And you're going to help us keep this podcast running. We couldn't do it without generous folks like you.
We really couldn't. And thank you to our sponsors, Ember Wave and BetterHelp. And a big thank you to all our patrons who are literally helping us make this show possible. We love you all and we thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm practicing gratitude.
So much gratitude.
So much. All right. Ovaries.
Out. Out. Let's do it like I'm over here and I'm eating some chocolate now.
Chocolate. I'm
opening the chocolate.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say.